Okay, my task now is to take you to another part of the world, closer, Europe, but Eastern Europe, Balkans. Namely, I would like to talk about the latest war in Europe, which is 1991-95, wars in former Yugoslavia, which some of you still might remember. Now, I want to make two simple points. One is that to show that international law was very instrumental in that war, or during that war and afterwards, in finding truth, and to show that how nationalism was and is preventing truth and justice. It's just a very small segment that I want to tell you about, and it happened recently, last autumn in November, that 10 Croatian generals were arrested in a tiny little place called Orašje in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Now, they are Bosnian citizens. They are ethnically Croats, but Bosnian citizens arrested on the Bosnian territory. They were charged with war crimes against Serbian population. But that event in November last year created a fierce nationalist response in the state, the separate state, another state of Croatia, among the politicians first, and then also whipped up by the media among citizens as well. Arrests were considered a hostile act, a plot, and not only against those individuals who were arrested, but against Croatia as well. To understand why the reaction was so fierce, and this is the end of 2016, so more than 25 years, more than 20 years after the end of the war, we have to ask ourselves actually what happened with war criminals after the end of the war, and were they brought to trial, actually with those who were not brought to trial, because of course the institution of the international law, which is ICTY, International Tribunal, International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia, made a very long list of criminals, but of course they were not capable of putting them all on trial. They distributed this list among the warring parties. So Croatia had her own list, Bosnia had a list, Serbia had a list. And for example, Bosnia was given 2,500 cases, Croatia more than 3,000 cases. And it was expected from them to investigate and to try their own war criminals. Did they do it? That is the question. Or how much they do it, I would say. Center for Dealing with the Past, it's called Documenta in Croatia, says that Croatia started within these 20 years about 3,500 cases started, and about 600 of them were brought to finishing. Croatia, Serbia, and Bosnia in 2013 signed treaty about cooperation and investigation and trials of war crimes. Therefore, what you see there, it's a clip from the newspaper, and the title of this clip is a quote from our president, a woman, President Grabar Kitarović, who said, "Our citizens should be tried in Croatia." Now, our citizens, these 10 men, being ethnically Croats, they also have double citizenship. But as I said, they were arrested in a foreign country, they are citizens of that foreign country, and yet she's saying they should be processed in Croatia. This, I think, title says enough for itself. They were charged against crime against humanity and war crime against war prisoners in April 1992 till July 1993. It was a lot of written about this case, but and it was seen as a political manipulative act of one state plotting against the other, as an act well, almost not bringing to the war, but as something that worsened the relationship between the state of Bosnia and Herzegovina and between the state of Croatia. Interestingly enough, the main politicians in Croatia said declined the knowledge about this case being prepared, although secret services said, yes, this was prepared for 6 years. It was in preparation, and of course, we informed all the top politicians in the country that this is being, that it is going to happen. The main argument, argument in quote was that why now? Why now? 25 years after the war, why now? And then, why only Croats were arrested? So everything in this this ethnic nationalist note was very, very important. Why now? This, I mean, I don't need to comment, but why only Croats? That's also not true. The newspapers brought the statistic of how many trials and how many sentences and how many investigations, and in fact, in Bosnia, and in fact, Croats are in a minority. All these questions, as a colleague of mine wrote, were wrong questions, because in the whole issue, what is most important, or what was most important and relevant, was what did these people do, and is it true what they did? What is the truth about that? The truth we don't know, because it has to be proven. But nobody even asked the question: how much of that is actually truth? Now, this is a high. There were also some other high-profile trials in Croatia, like the one of Branimir Glavaš or of Tomislav Merčep, for example. And it was always this attitude that we do not discuss the matter, the heart of the matter, and this is what are the crimes that these people committed. The high-profile trials of these two people, as many others, were necessary for Croatia to get into European Union. This was done in the preparation for getting into European Union, and not really very enthusiastically, as you can imagine. But Croatia had to became a member in 2013, and in order to do that, it has passed through the long stages of all kinds of preparation. Now, the big worry of Croatia and the big reason why these people are difficult to put them on trial or to investigate the crimes is the fact that Croatia is afraid. Croatia is saying two things now. One is that the official dogma is people who defend their own country cannot commit war crimes. That's number one. Number two, these crimes, if they happened, and when they happened, are only exceptions. There was no systematic intention of, because it leads to ethnic cleansing, there was no intention of ethnic cleansing, and these are only sporadic incidents. And what politicians there are afraid of is that it will be proven that it is systematic, that it was systematic series of crimes leading to ethnic cleansing, because what each of these countries ultimately wanted is to establish a nation state as clean as possible, if we are frank about this thing. So these are so to say things that one has to keep in mind to understand why it was not so easy for them to actually put these people or any people investigation or to investigate them or or put them on trial, and why they were so upset when this thing in Bosnia recently happened. This is also the reason, this is also the way to understand what role ICTY played for wars in ex-Yugoslavia when it was established in 1993. International court was needed because not only because it's difficult for the country to, juridical system is unprepared, it's still from the former communist times and so on, but also these people are not willing to try their own people because they are also at the same time, some of them are also heroes. And they have a status of a hero among the people in the country whom they were in fact defending. So how can one be a war criminal and a hero at the same time? And the same time. In my opinion, there are many, controversies about the role of ICTY. Was it clever? Was it not clever? Was it under political pressure? How were these investigations and trials conducted? And so on and so on. There are many questions about that. But I think, for me, the role of ICTY is important for another completely different reason. And the reason is that they brought truth about what happened during that war. But before I go on, I just want you to take you 25 years back, 26 years back, to illustrate the atmosphere in the country and why ICTY I found useful. To do that, I will take you to the case of family Zec, which is in Zagreb, Croatia. The year is 1991, December, late night on December 7th. A small group of five paramilitaries dressed in paramilitary uniforms rings the bell at the apartment of the family Zec in the middle of Zagreb. Father is a Serbian. This is important to understand. He opens, they enter. They tried to drag him out of the house. He escaped them. He runs to the street and he is shot by this group of people. Then they return and pick up mother and 12-year-old daughter, Alexandra. They tie them with rope, take them to a nearby woods. First they kill the mother. Then, with some hesitation, when comes Alexandra's turn, they kill her too. Soon they are arrested, and this group is investigated. They all confess the crime. That's very important. However, on a higher level, maybe even the highest level, it is ruled that because of procedural mistake, that is, absence of a lawyer, of their lawyer, while they were interviewed, which there are suspicions, maybe even intentional, they should be freed. So they confess, but they are freed. In this case, truth is known, but justice is not served. They were not investigated or tried again. Some of them were, but for completely different, in different cases. And, of course, there are some doubts that this was decided on the highest level. So this is the example how almost, I don't know, impossible, how difficult it was to turn to the justice. In other words, justice was not independent, and you could not, at that point, trust it. So going back to ICTY, I sat there for a while and wrote a book about war criminals on trial there. And what they did there is, in case by case, establishing a picture of what really happened. In other words, if you would leave it to us, warring parties, we would all have very different pictures. But they established truth. For example, they established one important story that all of you know, it's not a story, it's in, unfortunately, it's a fact, that in Srebrenica there was more than 8,000 Muslim men and as young as 14 to very old men killed by Serbian by a Serbian military under the command of General Mladic, who is now on trial there. So establishing pieces of puzzle, but truth, I see as a historical role of ICTY. So yes, it was Florence Hartmann, the journalist who was the speaker for Carla Del Ponte, wrote a book about how actually decisions were brought and how the ICTY worked. And for that, she was even sentenced. But beyond that, the purpose of it, showing the truth, proving the truth beyond reasonable doubt, in my opinion, was very, very important thing. The other thing that you could think of was a mass rape of Muslim women. It is difficult to establish the number, and the numbers are still not known precisely, because in such a cases it is difficult. But there is at least 30,000 women who were raped, and that was proven in this court. Or, for example, the destruction of the bridge in Mostar that was destroyed by the Croats, by Croatian troops, or existence of concentration camps, the siege of Sarajevo, all such things were proven there. So why is it important? It is important because without truth, we cannot come to justice. There is no justice, and if there is no justice, then there is no reconciliation. So we are in the situation that nationalism is preventing functioning of the justice or juridical system in the country of being independent. And this is what we need to understand when we are looking into these cases. Of course, I could give you more examples of that, but I think I might use them in the discussion. And the ultimate question which remains there is that when we have no truth, it is much easier to manipulate with public opinion. Is it much easier to inflame emotions? The question is, would it be better to decide to forget? Because there are two ways of dealing with the past, so-called German way and the Spanish way after Franco. What is better? Because we are going back and back 20 years, 25 years after the war. We are always at the same point, stuck in the past, where somebody else is telling us, no, guys, this is not true, what you are saying. And we cannot come to truth, we cannot come to justice, and therefore we cannot continue with reconciliation. We are, in a way, in my opinion, going backwards in that. Thank you very much.